ordered, you know, those kind.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today's Monday, January 26. Time is 9:06, and 05. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes and myself, Senator Holland, chair of the committee. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Alex, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. We have no official business on today's calendar, and we do not have a quorum to conduct official business, but we do have two presentations prepared from the Department of Labor. As we work on education issues facing the state today, it's important that we understand how this work ties into the rest of the system. Today's presentation will discuss a little bit about how the Department of Labor and Workforce Development interacts with the Department of Education and the university system. More importantly, this discussion highlights the fact that the students of today are the workforce of tomorrow. I hope today's presentation will provide insight on how our state policies prepare our young Alaskans to successfully transition into the labor market. The purpose of this hearing is to identify any gaps. And here's some, you got that? The purpose of this hearing is to identify any gaps in the current system so that we can work on them through the interim and fix them next session, or at least work on them next session. Our first speaker is Dan Robinson, Chief Economist at the Department of Labor. Mr. Robinson, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony. But first, I'd like to welcome Senator Begich to the committee meeting today.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for my tardiness. I was at the other committee, Education Committee, talking about a common bill.
Thank you so much. We had kind of figured that. And we just have two presentations on the agenda for today. So once again, Mr. Robinson, please say your name and affiliation on the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. Before I even do that, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. There was a little bit of garbled on your end. So if you see me put my hand to my ear or something, that's because I didn't understand the question.
Okay.
My name is Dan Robinson. I'm the research chief at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Our section produces a lot of the data that you see a lot of places, jobs, population. We'll talk a little bit about both of those this morning. And we also do some different term projections. So this morning we'll talk a little bit about school age population projections and current and recent numbers, and then some occupational projections as well. And then on the data side, how we work with partners at Department of Education, University of Alaska, also ACPE, Mental Health Trust. So, and I'd be more than happy to finish today with a list of data that you would like in addition to what I present. I've tried to keep things very simple. I don't want to overload with data, because then I think the core points get lost in the noise. But if there are any questions about what else we might have, then those are always welcome. So moving to the second slide, this is Alaska's school age population from 1980 through 2020. And probably the most relevant thing to note here is we have had no increase for about 20 years. In fact, we peaked at 163,000. So school age population, that's anybody from 4 to 18. And then over the next 20 years, we actually, essentially flat, but really we're down about 10,000. The number of school-age kids is down 10,000 in 2020 from what it was in 1998. There are reasons for that that I'd be glad to get into if you're interested. And as what I'll do, I'll pause at the end of every slide in case there are questions about that slide. And if there aren't, I'll go to the next.
All right, thank you, and I'd like to welcome Senator Machicki to the committee meeting this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. So are you ready for slide number three if there are no questions?
I am.
Oh, the question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, I wonder if you have this data by region and if we're seeing trends of maybe some communities that maybe might consider a place where families would prefer living as maybe other places. And I speak that from experience, because at one point we had an option to whether to live in Anchorage or live in the Mat-Su Valley. And we chose the Mat-Su Valley because we thought it was, not that Anchorage isn't family friendly, but we felt like that area, Palmer, was very family friendly. And the funny thing too about that was we had four children. I still have four children. And as we were looking around Anchorage and talking with realtors and looking at homes, they would like raise their eyebrow, four kids, that's a big family. When we moved to Mat-Su, four kids was a moderate family. And, you know, just lots of families, lots of children. So do you have regional data that's showing maybe there's some areas that might be breaking the trends? Because I have a feeling our area may be doing that.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, we do. In fact, two slides from now, we'll look at that in some detail. And your instincts are right. There is one, and only one, part of the state that bucks this trend, and fairly dramatically, and it's the Mat-Su borough. And we have detailed data. I'll just show you kind of a snapshot of that on slide five. But we have a lot of, we do these population projections by borough and census area. We do population estimates by borough and census area and lower level. So yes, why don't we hold off until I get to slide five, and we'll talk about that just a little bit more.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Sounds good. With no further questions, looks like we're looking at slide three right now.
Okay, so slide three, this is our most current long-term population projections, again, limited to this school-age population. And a couple of things I'll point out. One is that there is significant variation in terms of possible outcomes. We don't know the future. To some degree, we make the future. If you go even out to 2030, the variation is anywhere from 175,000 to 138,000. So right, and just to the red dotted line is the high case scenario with some different assumptions that are a little more optimistic, and then the low scenario. And one thing I'll mention too, our demographers who do this work. These were released in April of 2020. We do long-term population projections every 2 years, but already the blue line, our middle case scenario, looks too optimistic. So because of recent history, because of birth rates, because of negative net migration among family age parents, the blue line, if we could do this today, would be a little lower.
Question.
I'll pause there.
Question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking. I was going to ask you first that question. Had that changed since you've done, and you've answered that part of the projection, and you'll do this in April of 2022, I assume. So we'll have it for next year. And the reason why it matters to me is, of course, every 10,000 people is about $25 million. That's about what it seems to represent, somewhere in that neighborhood. It may be more than that, but it seems to be quite a great number. When we had our decline this year, we had a decline in our total outlay based on the base student allocation of about $25 million is what the anticipated decline was. So the low-case scenario, what were the assumptions? Because you're describing perhaps something closer to the 2020 low-case scenario for the blue line now. So what were the assumptions that went into the green line?
Well, Senator Begich, through the chair, the blue line wouldn't go that far down. The biggest difference in the assumptions is migration. So we've had, as you may have heard us say, negative net migration for 8 consecutive years. So more people moving away from Alaska than to Alaska. That's unprecedented. We've never had a period where we've had more than 4 consecutive years. So to the short answer to your question, Senator Begich, is different assumptions about migration.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so what was the assumption for net migration with the green dotted line?
I think it's negative 0.1%. And the blue line, it's negative 0.7%. to reflect recent history, but then we put it back to historical averages. And historical average is about negative 0.1%. And I'm going to check those just to, and I'll follow up with you if there's any, if I didn't get that quite right. But one point, the green line, it's not out of the realm of possibility because this 8 years, it's got our attention. Like I said, that hasn't happened before. It's not normal to get bogged down in that negative territory. Not normal by historical context. Late 80s, we had 4 years. 90s, we had 4 years, but never more than four. We're eight already, and nothing big has changed. So we'll most likely add at least a ninth in 2021.
And I'll just make a quick comment. It looks like in 2050, the green line has us going back to population similar to 1980, I would guess. That's what we're kind of looking at. And that's the worst case scenario, of course.
Chair Holland, yeah, it's a little higher than 1980. And these numbers, they projections always look smooth. Reality is not generally smooth. So I wouldn't read too much into the specifics of the low or high case scenario, other than for the important point that the future is very unknown. And to a degree, some of what we do will determine the future.
Thank you. If there are no a question or comment from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, good morning. I just looking when I flip back to slide two, you don't have to do that, but really we've been steady or falling since the mid 90s. I just wonder if you go further back. So you think about the reasons that Alaska's population increases or falls, and it's a trend. So you can say it's first time for 8 years, but there was a first time for 4 years. There's always a first time for everything, right? Wouldn't you expect that there'd be some sort of normalizing of the population and you get back into a growth range at some point, like we have throughout the rest of our, I mean, we've been in a boom and bust. We've had years of significant opportunities followed by years of either, relatively stable or dying, falling economy. Are there states that just continue to decline when you look at others? And if you put like the 50s to 2020 on this chart, wouldn't you find periods where you have more of that roller coaster effect?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, the Alaska's fascinating. We're a young state, not so much. I mean, we are young in terms of we're the third youngest in terms of the age of our population. But when I say young state, I mean more we're going through some of the things that that other states went through a long time ago. So we had early statehood, pre-oil. There was one set of assumptions and growth rates. Then we have the 70s and 80s, strong oil, boom and bust. We earned a reputation for boom and bust. Then we had kind of a remarkable 20-year period when we had less boom and bust. There were a couple of national recessions that we just grew right through for specific reasons. But kind of backing up to where you started, I would not assume any kind of normalization of these trend lines. There are usually fairly specific things we can point to for why something is growing or why something is not growing. And the where that starts is usually some connection to the jobs a state economy is producing.
All right, thank you. With no other questions, looks like we might be on slide four.
Yes, let's go to slide four. And this is partly to point your attention to this article that we did in March of 2020, where we, to Senator Hughes' point, looked at the details by borough and census area and then the six economic regions. And the point of this slide is not so much for us to look at the actual data, but you can see some things. And one of the things you can see when you look at the Anchorage-Mat-Su region is that Mat-Su sticks way out. So each graph shows all the borough and census areas in that region, and then the ones that are in the region are highlighted in whatever color. And you can see there is no other borough or census area other than Mat-Su that has seen its school age population grow from 2000 forward. Anchorage is roughly flat. You can see at the bottom in southeast, Yakutat is especially negative. Southwest Bristol Bay is down there, but all kinds of detailed information on the question that Senator Hughes asked. I'll stop there.
Question from Senator Hughes.
So thank you, Dan, for highlighting this. The question about that increase that we see in Mat-Su, is that just a general increase in the number, or can we also attribute it partly to the concentration of the youth within a group? So in other words, we might have 100 people move into Anchorage and 20 of those would be children where, I'm just throwing numbers, whereas 100 moving into Mat-Su, 50 might be children or something. So are we seeing a greater concentration per 100 or per 10,000 or whatever that are youth? And is that part of what we're seeing here as far as children, because we are hearing a continued trend. We're hearing from families, for instance, not happy with Anchorage School District, and so we think we're going to have more families moving out. So I think the concentration of children may be higher, which is important for us to know as far as our capacity in our public schools in the Mat-Su.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, we do have detailed age-based population estimates. So we know how many people of each age there are in the boroughs and census areas. I don't know that we've seen a specific concentration of a certain age that bucks statewide trends. The main thing that has driven Mat-Su growth for quite a while is, and you touched on this, is a certain kind of housing. Well, and the school thing, I don't know. I haven't heard a lot about that, but Mat-Su Borough remembers to its benefit how connected it is to the Anchorage job market. Mat-Su residents tend to, in large percentages, work in Anchorage jobs. There are also a high percentage of Mat-Su residents who work on the slope. So Mat-Su unemployment insurance claims have gone way up, for example. So Mat-Su, when we show these numbers and when we talk about Mat-Su and it being an outlier for growth for whatever reasons, we quite often remind people, don't think of Mat-Su as an island. It's very connected to what else happens in the state. And that's a little bit of a different answer than the question you asked, so I'm going to stop there.
Just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up from Senator Hughes.
If you could just kind of keep your eye on that, because my gut instinct is maybe that concentration of youth is a little higher, and or at least we may see that in the coming years. So I just appreciate you watching it. If you do start to see that trend, I'd be curious to know it. Thank you.
Yeah, and Senator Hughes, through the chair, what we do see quite clearly is a different housing, different set of housing options for Mat-Su. Housing is less expensive. You can get more land in Mat-Su. Anchorage has kind of run out of available land. So young families especially would be attracted to the housing type and the lower expense of housing in Mat-Su. That we've seen and written about.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I feel compelled, just for the record, to while I recognize anecdotally some people may not like the ASD, they've actually done a remarkable job under the former Mat-Su Borough's superintendent, who's, of course, our superintendent now, and I have not heard that in some way or manner our district is not doing a good job. In fact, we've improved graduation rates to near 90% in the district. We've improved our options in the district, and I got to be a cheerleader for my hometown here. But I appreciate the housing argument because, of course, housing is outrageous in my community, and I understand young people can't make it work in my district in particular. The house across the alley just went to sell, and smaller than mine, for $500,000, and it's certainly unaffordable to anybody at this point. So I understand that argument. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Begich, Senator Hughes.
And I'll just say part of my district is Anchor School District, and I hear good things. I know there are a lot of excellent teachers in situations. It's just we're starting to hear from realtors that there's more inquiries and families looking at moving out. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
Well, if we're going to do this, Kenai Peninsula Borough School District outperforms both of you. But I think Dan's point was the Kenai Peninsula is 140 miles away from Anchorage, right? So you have the proximity to Anchorage and the housing and sort of kind of freedom of the valley as well. Perhaps it's time to build that bridge. But it is interesting and all the factors that go into it. The question I was going to have, so the growth in the valley is not only related to the quality of life in the valley, it's related to other impacts from another community. But how do you, when you're, so I read economic trends every, I think it comes out quarterly, right? I mean, it's a great publication. I read every word of it. How do we turn the trend around? I know this is about education today, but frankly, is that something that you, Department of Labor, evaluates? I would like to stay flat at worst. I mean, it becomes very difficult just on the kind of economics of education when you have a receding population. Do you evaluate the factors that could improve the outcome to stay flat at worst and possibly have the economics of growth in the future without just accepting kind of the numbers?
Yeah, Senator Michicki, through the chair, one quick correction. Trends comes out every month, so I hope you read it cover to cover every month. But we have thought a lot about what is driving the negative net migration trends. It's there are all kinds of reasons why people move or don't move, but quality of life is definitely one of them. And if you're talking about a young family, mine included, that's not so young anymore, but what matters more to you than the quality of your schools? Not very many things. Cost of living, crime, there are other things, but broadly, and this is one of the things Alaska is wrestling with right now, stability, some of the kinds of things that matter to develop good, strong institutions are stability. If you've heard this more than I have, especially this committee, I'm sure, that if teachers aren't sure they have a future in Alaska, if they deal with pink slips, if university is, if there's lots of talk about budget cuts, that stuff matters, especially to young families. Imagine if you've got a couple of preschoolers and you're thinking, is this a state that's committed to education, that's stable, that's doing a good job at this? So part of what's going on here, we're fairly sure, is the state's instability is creating some headaches on the quality of life front, specifically K-12. And that's part of the reason people aren't moving to Alaska, part of the reason some people are leaving Alaska.
Okay, thank you. Looks like questions, comments may be exhausted. And are we on slide 5 at this time?
Yes. And so shifting to this is another task that we take on every 2 years. It's long-term industry and occupational projections. This gets about as much traffic on our website as anything we do. We hope it's because it's useful to schools, training programs, but it looks out 10 years, and really the focus is more on occupations and what might be growing, where maybe curriculum need to be tweaked, training programs have opportunities. And the pull quote that I included there, it is partly to encourage you not to get too distracted by the 2018 base year. I don't love that it looks a little stale because of that, but it takes us a while. It's important we get a solid base before we go ahead. So think a little bit more of we're going out to 2028. But when we published this, and this was October of 2020, we do talk about what's happened in the intervening periods, the big thing that happened in this round, of course, is COVID. And we did fuss with the numbers a little bit, make some last-minute adjustments. And like we say in that larger part of the poll quote, the long-term effects of COVID are to a significant degree unknown. I suspect that people, and what it probably did is accelerate some existing trends. COVID is very specific situation, unlike other recessions and other things. So we don't quite know how the world will change permanently because of COVID, but people are probably exaggerating how much it will change things, other than, like I said, to accelerate some existing trends that were underway. I'll pause there.
Seeing no questions.
Okay, jumping to slide six. This is not meant to have you look at individual lines in these tables. It's too much. But I do want to make a few points. One, I look at the middle group of data where we show growth, separations, and total openings. And everybody's interested for good reason in what occupations are growing, what's emerging, what new thing is happening in an economy. But by far, the largest number of openings, and openings are what matter to a job seeker, come from separations. And separations are both retirements and people just deciding they want to do something else, or deciding they want to do something else somewhere else. If they leave Alaska, if you're a school teacher and you decide you'd rather teach somewhere else, that shows up as a separation. So, and this page and the next page both, they are by education levels, the jobs that will have higher than average growth and higher than average earnings. So that's broadly our definition of a top job. And I won't get into the details of that there. Again, there's all kinds of, I hope, useful information in this October 2020 trends article that we wrote. And then on our website, even more, if you're interested in any specific occupation category, I'll stop there.
Senator Begich?
Just a really quick point, Mr. Chairman. You might not have seen this morning, but there was the Census Bureau is going to announce its numbers. And do you take, and when you're looking at these kinds of things, obviously those initial numbers will be macro, but they'll have a more micro dwell down. Do you do a reset of all your numbers based on what you see from the official numbers collected by the Census, or do you keep a separate, if you will, set of books that are sort of parallel but not quite comparable to the census numbers? Because that affects how I'm looking at this data.
Senator Begich, through the chair, our population, our demographics unit works really closely with the census on all the population numbers they do. For this occupational data, we have Alaska-specific data that's even better than what comes from the census on the occupations. So these quarterly contribution reports that all employers are required to file under state unemployment insurance laws include the occupation of the worker. So we have comprehensive counts of workers by occupation that's more detailed and more comprehensive than what comes from the census.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Robinson, I just noticed, I mean, if my just letting my eye sort of average the columns, looks like maybe 4.5% as far as a kind of mean, which seems significantly higher than your mid case on school age population. So it's just opportunity. Looks pretty heavy. The highest increases seem to be in the construction trades, which would be, you know, a growing economy, increased housing. Those two things don't seem to jive. Why is that?
Yeah, Senator Machicki, through the chair, they're done independently. The overall growth rate for that 10-year period is 5.5%. So if you annualize that, it is a little bit of growth. We don't try to reconcile them with any precision. We do talk broadly between our economists who track the job numbers and population, our demographers, to make sure that we're we're not assuming wildly different things or drawing different conclusions from these large data sets. But part of what would reconcile the lack of growth in school age population in our projections and the slight, very slight growth here, we're talking less than 1% a year over 10-year periods, is our age structure. So the school age population, those people aren't working. So they are different data sets. But you're onto something, because roughly those things will, one of them will be a little more right than the other eventually. Because if you do have job growth, you're going to have some of those job holders with children, and that will create some increase in the school age population.
And I know anybody who's watching this at home probably just not being able to see any detail on this, but this presentation and the one following it are available on the BASIS website under Senate Education Committee, probably under today's meeting documents, if anybody wants to go there and download it for themselves. With no other questions from the committee, I see we have page 6 and 7 is mostly focusing on this table. Did you want to go to page 8 or
look? Yes, Chair Holland, that would be good. And these last two, I won't belabor them other than to say we have quite good close collaboration with, I mentioned at the beginning, DEED, University of Alaska, ACPE, and these are just examples of a couple of types of things we can do, and just broadly to help you think about possible research projects or things that questions you might have as you do your policy work. We can take a student population and then identify whether they're still in Alaska, whether they're working in Alaska, if they are working in Alaska, what job they're working, how much money they're making. So Alaska's data rich for a few reasons. One is the permanent fund dividend. We have better information on who's still in the state. And that's part of what the data on page 8 shows, is we can identify what students we're keeping and educating here post-secondary, what students we're losing, how many of them complete their university education here or somewhere else, or their other training programs. So that's those pie charts. That's just an example of the type of work we've done with DEED. And then, well, I'll stop there in case there are questions specific to page 8 before I talk about page 9 a little.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious, how do you get the dividend form doesn't require us to tell about our education level. So how do you get the education level numbers? Because, well, for two things. One, in the 05, you have the unknown category of 17%. We don't know. I'm assuming that means unknown in that we don't know whether they're in Alaska or not in Alaska. Is that right?
That's correct, Senator Begich, through the chair. Well, I'll let you, if you have more to your question before I start up.
If I may continue. Yeah, so I just want to clarify that, because it's not quite an apples-to-apples comparison between the 05 and the 15 data, because it's a finite group. You don't know the 05 data. And then of those that we do know, you do the 2015 pie chart is from those that we do know, which may or may not be the group that we do know in 2005. Is that right?
Senator Begich, through the chair, it is an apples-to-apples comparison, but you make a good point that some of them we don't know where they are. And backing up to where you started, what we have are information on the graduates that then we match to a few different things, one of them being Alaska wage records, another one being University of Alaska data, who's enrolled. Eventually who's graduated, when a high school graduate leaves Alaska and doesn't enroll in an education program that's, because we can't identify them if they leave Alaska and go to school out in another state, but if they leave Alaska and go work in another state, they're lost to us. We can no longer find them. But we know they're not in Alaska working. We know they're not attending a University of Alaska or a training program. So we do know a lot about them. We just don't know the specific details.
Mr. Chairman, if I, for me, when I see things like this, I want to just be sure that we understand the caveat of the knowledge that's before us. It's the 2015 data is then reporting. Am I correct in you're saying that it's reporting on the known folks from 2005?
Well, Senator Begich, through the chair, not just the known, because there's that big category, if you'll, I'll take off my glasses, of, well, no, no, let's see, at no college, no, you're correct, that there is a group of unknown, the unknowns from 2005, disappear from the 2015. You're correct.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to just. It's always yes. important to look at those things. So.
All right. With no other questions. Senator Hughes.
So, taking that data, could you have another pie chart that told us how those 2015, how those 2005 graduates are doing in 2015 as far as the kind of jobs and the pay range and that kind of thing, so we know how successful they are. Are they contributing members, or are they dependent on the government, that kind of thing? Would you be able to provide that next step?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, partially. So we would be able to provide a lot of detailed information on how much they're making, what jobs they're working in, what industries they're working in. We would be able to identify if they're in Alaska and still applying for a permanent fund dividend. We don't do as much, and I would like it. I would like it if we did, on public assistance. So we that's not part of our you know, grand databases to be able to say, well, this person collected SNAP benefits. We do pocket research projects with those groups, but it's not kind of standard for us to be able to quickly say, other than who's working and who's in Alaska, what else they might be doing to create a data point that we could track, and specifically public assistance.
Thank you.
All right, with no further questions. Next.
So the last slide is just an example of some recent work we did with the University of Alaska. And the effort was to do something kind of visually unintimidating and hopefully useful to answer some basic questions about their programs. One, broadly, is are they getting jobs in Alaska? And that's the left page. When we worked at the university, they wanted to hone in on some specific programs. But so looking at process tech, for example, that 89% means that 89% of the graduates of that program showed up in the Alaska workforce within a year. And then we have some earnings data below that. It's a lot of rich data for nine different groups of university programs. The other thing I wanted to just kind of direct your attention to was on the second page, so the right half of the page, the 93.5%. This is intuitive, but I think it's important to emphasize, which is, if we educate people for the jobs in Alaska, they're far more likely to be resident workers. Alaska's always generated high-wage jobs, but a certain percentage of them have always gone to non-residents. So the highest profile example of that is oil and gas. About 30% of those high-wage jobs are held by non-residents. That's not necessarily a negative thing, because it's a big world-class industry, and we don't always have the skills here to do that, and we're a relatively small population. But if we care about kind of extracting maximum benefit from the jobs we generate and having those benefits go to Alaskans, it's pretty clear that educating those workers here makes a difference. And that's my last slide. I'll stop talking.
Are there any final questions from the committee?
I would make a final comment. A
comment from Senator Begich.
I just want to say that Dan, that last set, that collaboration you guys are all doing, that's been very, very useful in a number of other bills that we've been seeing, not just in this committee, but in the Finance Committee and other committees. And I just can't commend you enough for tracking that data and underscoring how important it is to educate folks locally.
Thank you, Senator Bennett. I love hearing that it's useful. I mean, it's one thing to produce data, but to have it be used by policymakers, that's why we do it.
And Senator Machicki?
Yeah, Mr. Robinson, just a quick one. I just wondered if you ever considered exit surveys for people that are leaving the state. My assumption has been that people that are leaving the state, the vast majority of them are people that we would like to keep here, productive, kind of have it going on, but see greater opportunities elsewhere. And any understanding you can give us as policy members or policy makers on how to improve the retention of those individuals with opportunity would be really helpful. I'd like to know why they're leaving specifically on and how we can sort of attack that. I get the big picture. I'm sort of looking at the individual considerations that people are making when I think the best and brightest have chosen to leave the state.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, there is some data available from the census of why people move, but let me just make one quick point that it's not even that that we've had a big increase of people leaving the state. What we've had more specifically is a decrease in people moving to Alaska. The number who have left have actually declined in the last 5 or 6 years, but the number who've come here have declined much more. So, and that's an interesting group. You know, you think it's easy to understand people who leave. Why did you leave? And I'm interested in that same question. But it's a little bit harder to think, why didn't you come here? What about Alaska didn't attract you? Because Alaska has a lot to attract people. Something's changed in the last, 8 years.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Robinson. Appreciate it. It's very spirited questioning and answers from the committee. Next, we have Louise Dean, Director of Alaska Workforce Investment Board. Director Dean, if you can hear me, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony. We have slide one up in front of us right now.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chair Holland and members of the Education Committee.
Good morning.
My name is Louise Dean. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, which is in the Department of Labor Workforce Development. And I'm going to refer to the board as the AWIB. The AWIB is the lead state workforce development agency, and the board oversees the training programs in the state. So as we go through the slides today, I will highlight the many state and federal grant programs that the AWIB oversees and provides available training to the residents of the state. So slide two.
Slide two is up.
Okay. Let me get it here. So the first slide is highlights the state-funded training programs. The State Training and Employment Program, STEP, that is a program that the Workforce Board oversees, and that program is funded by a percentage of employee contributions to the Unemployment Insurance Training Fund. And the funds are awarded through a competitive process. So training providers submit applications, and the applications are reviewed by a panel of board members, and recommendations are then forwarded to Dr. Ledbetter, the commissioner. And last year we had 35 STEP grantees with a total award of $5,512. The Construction Academy, that's funded by general fund dollars determined by the legislature. And last year there were 8 Construction Academies with a total award of $1,754. And then the Alaska Technical and Vocational Education Program, the percentage awarded to the recipients is determined by the legislature in statute. And in FY21, the slide says 7, there's actually 10, but the board oversees 7 TVEP recipients. The other 3, which is the University of Alaska, SAVIC, and AVTEC, they all receive their allocation directly. It's not administered through the AWIP. Next slide.
Slide three is up.
Okay. So the federally funded training programs we have is the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act Youth Program. And the providers for the Wiella Youth, they apply through a competitive grant process. And in FY21, there were 13 Wiella Youth providers, and the total amount awarded was $3,736. And we had a National Emergency Dislocated Worker Program grant, which is ending. And in FY21, it provided $767,000 in recovery funds in response to the November 2018 earthquake. Then there's also statewide project program, which is Alaska Work Partnership, Helmets to Hard Hats, which is a program designed for transitioning veterans. The Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, it's a youth housing development program, and that focuses on at-risk youth and homeless at-risk youth, and the programs totaled $450,000 in FY21. Next slide.
Slide four is up.
Okay. The department and the AWIB also oversee the apprenticeship programs in the state. So the we currently have three different apprenticeship programs. The American Apprenticeship Initiative, AAI, that grant award was for $2.999 million, and that grant has been used to provide pre-apprentice training grants to individuals seeking training in healthcare. So we have over 90 healthcare sponsors and over 650 apprentices. Apprentices have been registered in 17 healthcare occupations. And the State Apprenticeship Expansion Grant, which was awarded for $1.867 million. The purpose of that program is to expand statewide apprenticeship. And then the last one is the Apprenticeship State Expansion. And the purpose of that is to integrate the construction registered apprenticeship programs into the state workforce development system. And the total grant award was $1 million for that apprenticeship grant. Next slide.
A question from Senator Hughes.
Yes. Yes, thank you for being with us today, Louise. So these two pages on all these training program funding, I'm just wondering, the National Emergency Dislocated Worker Program was specific to earthquake, over $750,000. Is there any kind of National Emergency Training Fund due to the displaced workers because of the pandemic and the government requirements and such? Is there any kind of fund coming in for that?
No, but there are grant opportunities for states to apply to receive funding for retraining, upskilling. But there hasn't been a national emergency grant. But there are other grants that the department can apply for.
And a follow-up from Senator Hughes.
And is the state applying for those grants, for that purpose, for those that have been impacted by the pandemic and suffered job loss and need retraining?
Yes. I hit the submit button on Friday applying for the apprenticeship grant. It's to expand apprenticeship, but also help people who have been affected by COVID, who need to be retrained, upskilled, who are out of work. So we did apply for that, and if we receive that grant, the start date is July 1st, and that is an apprenticeship grant.
Thank you.
All right, so it looks like we may be on slide number five.
Okay, so the training programs that the department has and the AWIB oversees, anyone in the state can go to a job center and receive information on those programs, referrals, receive individual training account funding to use to get training. So there's 12 job centers statewide, and for the areas that don't have an actual physical location, like in the northern region, those services are performed teleconference, video, so that's how those are being performed right now. And the job centers are currently closed to the public due to COVID, and they're working on reopening those. Next slide.
Slide six is up.
Just if I
can. Okay.
A question or comment from Senator Begich?
Just a comment. I was in the, you went a slide too fast for me. I was in the midst of tallying up the totals. That was
I noticed that.
$22.5 million is what that total comes to, that annual program amount. When you add all of these programs together, it was $22.5 million. I didn't realize it was quite that much we were putting. I don't know that seems like a rather substantive number. And I'm curious as to how many individuals access that. I don't know if that's something that's quantifiable, but that's a lot of money, and so I'm assuming a lot of individuals were. I don't know if Louise, you can answer that, but.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I can provide that information after this meeting, if that's okay.
Sure. I'm just curious. Yeah.
No, I know the information's there. I just need to retrieve it and send it to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And it's a lot more than you realize, so. Okay, so.
Looking at slide number six right now, I believe.
Slide six. So these are the regional training centers located throughout Alaska. And the regional training centers are actually the TVEP, the Technical Vocational Education Program. These are their locations, and they are listed in the table on the side. So all of the TVEP recipients, they're spread out throughout the state. They work closely with the department and the board on determining what occupational needs there are, just, you know, keeping everything flowing with servicing the people in those areas. And the red dot is the UA workforce program. So those are all the satellite sites that the University of Alaska statewide system provides training program services in Alaska. Next slide.
Slide seven is up.
So slide seven just shows a distribution of the FY21 training grants that the AWIB had oversight of and distributed around the state to training providers. Next slide.
Slide eight.
So the Alaska Vocational Technical Education Center, AVTEC, is a division of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And AVTEC has provided post-secondary vocational education since 1969. And the program is employer driven, so there's relevant training for Alaska jobs. And the five-year average, there's over a 90% student completion rate and 90% placement and employment. And recently, AVTEC was ranked in the top 1% nationwide for the best return on investment. And I don't know if you all have been to AFTEC. It's located in Seward. It's a great facility. And that is the end of my presentation.
Yes, Director Dean, I was fortunate enough to go to AFTEC for a kind of like a Coast Guard slanted visit, and got to use one of their simulators to try to dock a cargo ship. And it was very interesting, crazy high technology they have available there. A question or comment from Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like the folks down in Seward are doing a phenomenal job with AFTEC, and it's one of 10 training centers. So how do the other 9 compare with that? Are we seeing similar results, or is there room for improvement?
There is a report that I can provide to you after this meeting that shows different completion rates. AFTEC is the leader, from what I recall, in outcomes.
And AFTEC is a hard bar to compare others to. They
yes.
Had a lot of development on that. Anything else, Senator Hughes?
Yeah, I would say they're probably the gold standard based on these stats. Is there any work to find out the keys to that success and replicate those in the other 9 training centers so that we can improve what's going on in the other 9?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, you know, AFTEC has been doing this a long time, and they one of the main reasons for their success is their involvement and their connection to the community and to employers, and then meeting the employer needs. I don't know if other training providers could replicate everything exactly, but they are successful and they have an excellent program, but the other TVEP programs around the state are also excellent and, you know, do provide what they need in their regions.
A follow-up from Senator Hughes?
It seems that the Department of Labor and oversight that you have with these, that would be a good project, is to really identify from the regional training center that is the oldest and the most successful, to identify specific best practices that could be replicated. And I would urge the Department of Labor to consider that, because essentially we'd have more people employed across the state. I don't think we could go wrong doing that.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I mean, AFTEC's in my district. I should probably mention that. But, you know, a lot of their success, I think, is just partnership with industry. They're training real people for real jobs that are available, and they've been in partnership on those needs for many years, and it just really works. And, you know, you talked about an example of the partnership is when we were bringing new ships into the Kenai LNG facility that were larger than any we'd ever looked at. We were looking at all the kind of maritime academies for our vessel terminal compatibility studies and things, and found out we had it right here in Seward, Alaska. I mean, it's phenomenal what's available. So I think that's working in construction with the people that will be hiring folks is the key to AFTEC's success, not just on specific content, but the skills that we know we're going to need, no longer in industry, but we've had similar successes with the University of Alaska on some of their process tech programs as well. So I think, and I'm not sure if that's how the Department of Labor works, if they every 5 years do a survey of what skills they think will be needed and then develop the, you know, curriculum to meet those needs or not. But it seems like that's what's happened at AFTEC. And I'd love to hear from Louise if I seem to be capturing that accurately and if there's more room for further development.
Senator Matricki, you did capture that accurately. And I know that AvTech is working with other industry to provide training programs that are needed in the state, along with working with apprenticeship programs. So you were very accurate, and I know one of the areas AvTech will be working with is information technology, and that is currently being developed. So, but yes, that's a need in Alaska.
All right, thank you. Senator Hughes?
Yeah, Senator Matichkin's remarks and your early remarks that AvTech's partnership with industry is probably one of the main reasons why they're so successful in turning out students who are employed. So that begs the question, in all the grants that you administer, and I know some of them involve federal dollars, so I don't know how much leeway you have, but is part of the criteria that they partner with industry and that they put together the curriculum schedule based on industry needs, or is that not part of the grants?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, when training providers apply for grant funding, the review panel for the AWIB members, they look at if the grant is in line with priorities that the Workforce Investment Board has. The AWIB has several training plans that they've worked in partnership with different industries such as healthcare, maritime, mining, career and technical education. So they look to see that the applications align with, you know, training priorities. So yes, they do that. And the applicants are also aware of the priorities for training in the state.
All right. Well, thank you, Director Dean, and thank you, Mr. Robinson, before that. Thanks to everyone at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development for the work you do. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, April 28th at 9 a.m., and if members have any amendments on SB 119 and Act relating to oaths of office, please send them to my office before 3 p.m. tomorrow. And is there any other business for the committee? Seeing none. We are adjourned at 10:08.